Recorded live at Talks and Tasting Studios, it's the Clerical Errors Podcast, the podcast that shows you what's behind the collar. Let's go.
From the Talks and Tastings Studios, this is the Clerical Errors Podcast, the podcast that shows you
what's behind the collar.
This is Bullhagen.
This is Bert.
And this is Vicar.
Peter's here.
Hey, Pete.
How's the gang doing? Holding strong this Lent?
Pretty all right.
Yep. Pretty all right.
Can you believe that Big 12 championship where Iowa State ended up winning?
Wow. After the women won the championship in Kansas City there on Tuesday.
I mean, that was a bit of a foregone conclusion. They were kind of dominant, but, you know, the men were ankle biters, you know?
Yeah, how did Wyoming do? Is that the Big Sky Conference, Berg?
Sure. I don't know.
No, wait. I think they're in the Mountain West. I could be wrong. Nobody knows.
I have no idea.
We'll have to get an update from 15 point. He's no longer a number. From Baldwin.
Oh, that's right.
He went there. So, everybody doing all right? Doing all right?
Yeah, doing good.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What do you got there?
I've got Ardbeg again.
Okay. Hey, Vicar, I'm going to chastise you publicly.
Okay.
Okay. Hey, when we're done recording, don't leave your hard liquor right there on the table in the middle of our studio.
Okay.
Where anybody can just walk in, where youth group members and people kind of just milling about, cleaning perhaps. They might say, wow, we have all this hard liquor sitting here unaccompanied on a table. Maybe you shouldn't do that.
Fair enough.
They might get the wrong impression.
It's funny how somebody might catch it, though, because the studio is just so vast that there's so many places you could put it.
Yeah, I mean...
could get lost in the
you
mess.
You could at least hide it in here, you know?
Yeah.
What do you think, Berg?
Indeed. I'm just thinking about the Raiders of the Lost Ark, where they, you know, it's like the Ark of the Covenant. Just put it in a box.
Right.
then put it among the rest of the boxes.
In a warehouse somewhere.
Well, isn't that what the studio is?
Kind of.
Basically.
Yes, it is a...
There's enough ancient artifacts in here to be considered a warehouse.
Yes, I like to think that somewhere down the line in some sort of museum for the Missouri Synod, I'm sure there's going to be one, that they'll have a replica of the studio.
As long as they have, like, wax figures of us.
Right.
Yeah, well, once you retire, you can send all this stuff into Concordia Historical Institute. I'm sure they would love to set up a diorama.
Yeah. A diorama.
I've got some of the Clear Seal Errors coffee mugs that I can put up in there.
There you go.
Nice.
Yep. So this is a part of the show where I try and get Berg going. Let's go, Berg. Let's get fired up.
Yep.
Vicar, what am I preaching on here?
You're preaching on John 8 this Sunday. Jesus said to them, "If God were your father, you would love me, for I came from God and I am here. I came not of my own accord, but he sent me. Why do you not understand what I say? Is it because you cannot bear to hear my word? You are of your father the devil, and your will is to do your father's desires. He was a murderer from the beginning and has nothing to do with the truth, because there is no truth in him. When he lies, he speaks out of his own character, for he is a liar and the father of lies. But because I tell you the truth, you do not believe me. Which one of you convicts me of sin? If I tell the truth, why do you not believe me? Whoever is of God hears the words of God. The reason why you do not hear them is that you are not of God." The Jews answered him, "Are we not right in saying that you are a Samaritan and have a demon?" Jesus answered, "I do not have a demon, but I honor my Father, and you dishonor me. Yet I do not seek my own glory. There is one who seeks it, and he is the judge. Truly, truly, I say to you, if anyone keeps my word, he will never see death." The Jews said to him, "Now we know that you have a demon. Abraham died, as did the prophets, yet you say, 'If anyone keeps my word, he will never taste death.' Are you greater than our father Abraham, who died? And the prophets who died? Who do you make yourself out to be?" Jesus answered, "If I glorify myself, my glory is nothing. It is my Father who glorifies me, of whom you say he is our God. But you have not known him. I know him. If I were to say that I do not know him, I would be a liar like you. I do not know him, and I keep his word. Your father Abraham rejoiced that he would see my day. He saw it and was glad." So the Jews said to him, "You are not yet 50 years old, and have you seen Abraham?" Jesus said to them, "Truly, truly, I say to you, before Abraham was, I am." So they picked up stones to throw at him, but Jesus hid himself and went out of the temple.
All right. So, Vicar, I think I already got the working title of my sermon.
What's that?
He gets us. Right? Right? Oh, yeah. It just goes right along with the whole He Gets Us campaign, right?
But yeah, exactly.
You are of the devil. Yeah, He gets us.
It's almost like he actually understands human nature.
Yeah. It's interesting, though, of Lent. We got a little break last week talking about Jesus providing with the feeding of 5,000 and right back to the demon stuff.
Yeah, already.
Yeah, what do you got on this, Berg?
I mean, there's a lot of ways you could go here. One thing you could talk about is how Jesus is beyond reproach as a preacher, because he begins with, you know, who will convict me of sin, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which of you convicts me of sin? And if I tell the truth, why do you not believe me? You get sanctification in this. He who is of God hears God's words. You do not hear because you are not of God. And that's just in the first, you know, few verses. The second one is that the slander in verse 48, do we not say rightly that you are a Samaritan and have a demon? And it's interesting, Jesus doesn't even answer the Samaritan part, because he's not there for his own glory. He's there for his Father's glory. But he has to answer the fact that he has, you know, the charge that he has a demon, because then that dishonors his Father. And so as preachers, this also teaches us that, hey, attacks against our person, let them go. But when they accuse us of having a demon or preaching the wrong stuff or being a bigot, we actually have to answer it. The other interesting thing here is like if anyone keeps my word, he shall never see death. And it's interesting how it changes from seeing death to tasting death, because that sort of language is only used by Jesus in Matthew 16:28, Mark 9:1, and Luke 9:27, where he's talking about some standing here shall not taste death till they see the Son of Man coming in his kingdom. Same thing with Mark 9, that till they see the kingdom of God present with power. And then again in Luke 9:27, there are some standing here who shall not taste death till they see the kingdom of God. And it's interesting because there seems to be a difference between tasting death and seeing death. Jesus says we won't see death, which I'm sure means the same thing as eternal damnation. Tasting death seems to be more of actual physical dying. Jesus is saying, look, you guys aren't going to die until the kingdom of God comes in its power, which is, of course, in Jesus' crucifixion, death, resurrection, and finally in his ascension, and then Pentecost and the like. So that's an interesting thing. The only other place in the Bible where that kind of language is used is Hebrews 2:9, where it says, but we see Jesus, who was made a little lower than the angels, for the suffering of death, crowned with glory and honor, that he, by the grace of God, might taste death for everyone. And this, of course, is talking about his physical death. So it seems like tasting death is physical death. Seeing death is eternal damnation. And the Jews here change the language in order to make Jesus look ridiculous.
Yeah.
Because Abraham and the prophets died. Who are you? Then, of course, you have the answer, right? I am. Which, right, of course, brings us back to Exodus chapter 3, which is the name of God, the covenant name of God. When Jesus says, I am, he is claiming to be the God of Israel. Which is why if you read in your Bibles all of the, cap or no cap, right? If you see, if you see Lord in all caps, this is Yahweh. This is I am. And I think because we translate it in that way, people miss out on what Jesus is saying in the Gospel of John when he says things like, I am the door, or I am the good shepherd, or I am the way, the truth, and the life. Mm-hmm. They recognize it because they pick up stones to stone him.
Right. Right.
Another thing you could bring up is that the faith of Abraham is the same faith as our faith, right? Abraham rejoiced to see my day. They believed in the Messiah.
Yeah.
Was that enough?
Yeah, that's good. That's okay. All good stuff. Yeah, I've obviously done a lot of prep work. Truth be told, we do this on a Monday, and I've had an allergic Monday. I'll talk about that a little later. But I will say one thing that as I kind of place myself in what was going on, I mean, anytime you would generally meet someone who says, oh yeah, you know, I'm God, I, the Father, are one, what is our natural reaction going to be?
They're crazy.
Right, right. And so this whole discussion comes down ultimately to the Bible. Like, you don't take just his word for it. He speaks for the Father. But the Old Testament, the prophets, give us a heads up. The reason for their unbelief is they actually rejected what the Bible or what the Old Testament and the prophets and Moses had been saying. And so here Jesus says, you know, makes a connection between he and the people of the Old Testament, that before they were, he was. And so part of that is a not knowing or understanding or rejecting what was really going on in the Old Testament. And in that, if they understood what was going on, then they would understand who Jesus is. But they didn't. Because never does the Bible in this type of saying just say, well, look, I do these things. Even John, Jesus told the disciples of John, go tell them what I do, to show that he was a fulfillment of the prophets. It's a continuation. And I think that's something we need to remember is all the miracles that Jesus did, they are all in reference to those things and a continuation. And it's not just, oh, we're just going to not believe. Part of that goes back to the word of God. And when you talk about the interesting here thing you see here also is, did you notice how the discussion on what is true and what is false becomes for them an interesting discussion on demons? When he says something that they don't believe is true, now we know you have a demon. At least the Pharisees understood here that there is to demonic power behind lies. They're just on the wrong side. And when we think of what demons can do and what they do, ultimately, it comes down to what is right and what is wrong, what is truth and what is false. It's all an information thing. And so you find this in here too. But I think it's always good to explain in a sermon like this is the importance of Jesus being fully God, right? So I think there's all sorts of discussions there too. All right, now we need someone with great wisdom to put this all together. So Vicar, what do you...
You're funny.
You got nothing?
Oh, you actually want me to say something? Okay. Yeah, I mean, it is really ironic that they disbelieve in Jesus, right? That he's showing how the faith of Abraham points towards him, and they continue to disbelieve, even though they think that they're inheritors of Abraham's tradition, right?
Mm-hmm.
But even though they've pretty much gutted it for what it actually is, it's really just a shell of what it once was. And so they are the ones who they accuse Jesus of being, which is someone filled with demons. So it's kind of funny, not funny, but ironic, the subversion that's kind of happening here, that they're kind of projecting onto Jesus what they actually are.
Yeah, actually we had a discussion, was it last week, where I gave you a little, you know, from Uncle Carl advice. Oh, remember what that was?
Yeah. Yeah, that one thing that people kind of nag on is usually the thing that they're struggling most with in their life.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, by when people nag on something or they're hypercritical about someone, what they're actually doing is expressing their vulnerability.
Which makes so much sense if you really think about it.
Right. So, for example, I don't want to continue. I don't want to do that. You got any examples in mind for that?
If you have any examples, you can email us at...
All right.
Moving on.
So, you know, sometimes when I come up with my top 12 lists, I've got two of them. Because every once in a while, I like to do a speed one.
Mm-hmm.
So, but this has to do with allergies, because today I've broken out into some sort of hive things. And I learned that I'm probably allergic to peanuts.
Oh, yeah.
And
how'd you find that out?
Well, what happened was I ate peanuts last night. And this morning, I got hives. And I don't really eat peanuts that often because of my eosinophilic esophagitis. So I'll try things out. And I didn't have peanuts for the sake of my esophagus, but now that I hadn't had it in a while and I ate them, I got hives. Weird.
That's bad news for Bullhagen.
Yeah. I used to eat a lot of peanut butter. I didn't know that you could get a food allergy when you're 50, like out of the blue.
Yeah. Yeah, you can develop a food allergy at any time.
That's weird.
Maybe you were allergic the whole time and that was just normal.
Oh.
And maybe you were inflamed just constantly.
Constantly inflamed. Yes.
Peter, title the episode Constantly Inflamed. Thank you.
All right. So what we'll start with I have my speed top 12 list. I want to get this out to save Peter editing so he doesn't have to add each of the numbers for it. Unless it does, you don't mind. I was going to have.
I hate doing the numbers, man.
Okay. So for the speed run, when I point to you, give me the number.
Okay.
And by the way, okay.
I know what he's about to say.
I get a text from Peter, right?
Yeah.
He says, you had the numbers right. Vicar was the one that was wrong.
Oh, well, I'm not surprised.
It all got edited out of the episode, but we repeated two separate numbers in that list.
Oh.
I think we did 8 twice and 4 twice or something like that.
Oh, whoops.
All right. So this is my first speed top 12 list is the top 12 things that I have grown allergic to at the age of 50.
Wait, there's 12 of them?
Yeah.
Okay. Speed.
Do you want the number or do you want the intro?
Did we do the intro yet?
I haven't done the intro. That's why I asked.
Did we do the intro? I don't know.
Do you want to do the intro for this?
Yes, please. Okay.
Peter, play the intro.
Enough nonsense. It's time for Bullhagen's top 12.
Number 12.
People doing lame sets at the gym. I can't stand that.
Number 11.
Dumb stuff.
Number 10.
Dogs and TV commercials.
Number 9.
Peanuts.
Number 8.
Being able to see anything.
Number 7.
Winter.
Number 6.
Shirts.
Number 5.
Dairy.
Number 4.
Any vehicle that's not a sedan.
Number 3.
Chumps that be biting my rhymes.
Number 2.
Wheat.
Number 1.
Kids playing outside and having fun. Okay,
number 9 was peanuts.
I had to kind of add it to the list, right?
Do you want to explain any of those?
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
questions?
It was a speed.
Okay, like 11, dumb stuff.
That's pretty self-explanatory.
Right. Like my poor wife, we're watching TV and I am like, do you ever see the easy button where just you press a button and it says, like I'm watching TV with my wife and I'm like the dumb button. That's dumb. That's dumb. That's dumb.
Bro, you watched Beavis and Butthead.
Yeah. Ren and Stimpy.
Ren and Stimpy. Yeah. Children playing outside you're allergic to?
Yeah, I don't trust them. Having fun outside.
What kind of a person does that?
Dogs on commercials?
Oh, come on.
Are you talking about those like ASPCA commercials?
No, I'm talking about, okay, that you need a new SUV. Why? So that your dog can go outside and play. You can take your dumb dog everywhere. Let's center what we live, what kind of house we have, what kind of vehicle we drive, what kind of food we ate, what kind of food your dog eats. It's a dog. Give it dog food. Take it outside. Enjoy your dog. But come on. Every commercial has to have a dog to sell anything anymore. No imagination. I don't know. What do? Let's just throw a dog in the dumb commercial. People will buy it. It's like the cranberry. Remember every juice had a cranberry in it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, now we're putting a dog. Every commercial has a dog in it. It's like a Coca-Doodle commercial. It's a Volkswagen doodle commercial. Everything has a dog in it anymore. I don't mind dogs.
Bullhagen, I'm proud of you. Like, I can't believe it's taken you this long to get so crotchety, but you finally arrived.
And kids, outside playing. Just chill. Play nicely, respectfully.
You might as well have said, like, kids on my lawn.
Yeah, stay off my lawn.
But who's with me with this dog thing?
I can get behind that.
I don't watch TV.
I'm not anti-dog, really. I'm not. But come on. Do you have to have it in every commercial? Every commercial?
Hey, man, it's what consumers want.
Yes.
And that's the
problem. Why sedans are dying, too.
I mean, okay, here's the thing about sedans, okay? They're very economic. Well, we want to have everything be green. We want to conserve energy. We want to make everything so that we don't use as many greenhouse gases. We're going to make everything hybrid. We're going to make everything you plug it in so you can burn coal to power your car. But then everything has to be an SUV. Do you know what's very efficient? A nice sedan, low to the ground, good fuel economy, less metal. Very comfortable, you can stretch out. All right. Yeah. Okay. There's less room for your dumb dog. But is that a bad thing? Like, do you have to have your dog to have a good time?
Here's a question, though. What about coupes, man? Coupes have all the same advantages, but they're even more comfortable for the driver.
Yeah. The thing is, my fear is that sedans are going to go the way of the coupe. They're going to float. They're going to fly the coupe. Berg, you're quiet here. Do you have an opinion on any of these topics?
No, not at all.
All right. Well, do you have anything you've grown allergic to, Berg? It's kind of funny. You've turned into the happy, jovial one.
Yeah.
I'm the grumpy old man.
Yeah, it's quite a role reversal.
Was Peanut 9 on that list?
That was 8.
I think. 8. Okay.
Right. I'm not allergic to peanuts as I am to shirts. So.
That's true.
Well, I'm glad you put up with your allergy to shirts for us. We appreciate it.
Oh, it's itchy. All right. So.
Moving on.
Moving on to the real top 12 list with real numbers. Listeners, you like these speed top 12 lists? I kind of fun. So these
it came,
are
it came so fast I couldn't react. I still feel like I missed a couple. I have to go back to the recording.
All right, so this is now the official, that was just a speed run. This is the official list. I'm not gonna start doing this. I can't believe we haven't done this yet, okay? Because they're all top 12 lists, but we need to make certain lists that are just official top 12 from the Clerical Heirs podcast, and that's what this is. This is a top 12 list of examples of people as they age growing allergic to something. Make sense?
I think it will. After the first one.
Okay.
So, for example, there is a large fish in the Bible that develops an allergy to minor prophets.
Is this number 12?
Number 12.
Number 12.
Do you want to play the intro?
Peter, play the intro.
Enough nonsense. It's time for Bullhagen's Top 12.
I'll take care of it. It takes you so long to process sometimes, Vicar. I got this.
Yeah, it does.
Okay, number 12.
Number 12. Large fish. A large fish develops an allergy to minor prophets.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty self-explanatory, right?
Mm-hmm.
Number 11.
Melanchthon grows allergic to leaving things alone. Right?
Nice. I like that. Do you want to explain?
Do you want to give a little context to that?
He, this is very heavy air quotes, fixed the Augsburg Confession. So you've got the original and then the altered Book of Concord.
Yeah.
We don't subscribe to.
And he's always kind of trying to fix everything, and he just...
Yeah, he's always tinkering with things.
Yeah, always tinkering. Just leave it alone.
Is this the Snyder Cut?
Well, does the Snyder Cut make it worse?
Well, I don't know.
Number 10.
Pelagius grows allergic to the concept of original sin.
Yes, he did.
Number 9.
Paul became allergic to murdering Christians.
That sounds like a good allergy.
Right.
Yep.
Just one, man. Come on. You don't know. Nah, man. I can't do it.
One more. Oh, I can't. Oh. Yeah.
I'm allergic.
Okay. I had a knack for it. I'm not going to lie, but
I can't even smell it. Otherwise, I'll relapse.
Number 8.
Martin Stefan grows allergic to the Sixth Commandment. We got to be careful. I've heard his family can be a little litigious.
Number 7.
Goliath grows allergic to stones.
Yeah, you could say David rocked him to sleep.
There you go. I was waiting. I was waiting, Berg. I was waiting.
Number 6.
Now, this is what I would call a late onset allergic reaction. Kind of like I'm 50, right? And all of a sudden, I can't eat peanuts.
Right.
Right? Ehud grew allergic to swords. But it was late onset.
Okay, you could do better than that one.
So the first, he was so fat.
Right, he had to really shove it in, yeah.
Right, right. It took some time before the allergy actually
caught up with
in.
Him, yeah.
I thought he's allergic to diets, maybe.
He's allergic to keto.
Yeah.
Number 5.
A Haggai develops an allergy to apathy in rebuilding the temple.
Nice. Okay.
Number 4.
Gnostics develop an allergy to the material world.
Because I'm living in a material world.
Number 3.
The church in Jerusalem grew an allergy to legalism.
Number 2.
What? Maybe I only did 11. Man, this is Benadryl.
I got you, man. I got you.
Can you have an allergic reaction to Benadryl? Because I think I might be.
I think that's kind of counterintuitive.
Do you take more Benadryl if you're allergic to it? Seems like a death spiral.
That's when they give you the EpiPen, I think.
Okay.
The EpiPen is just more Benadryl.
Is it? I had no
idea.
No,
it's...
No, it's epinephrine, isn't it?
So are you all out of numbers?
Wait.
You have 2 more, don't you?
Yes.
Do you have at least 11? I can give you another one. I've got one.
Number 2.
The church must always fight against the gospel allergy. At some point, everyone gets tired of it, and they want to try something new.
That's one of
it's too simple.
Bad allergies.
Right.
And then you get screens put in the sanctuary.
Right. But, like, the majority of heresies out there, generally because they just get allergic to the gospel, not enough. Won't do it.
Yeah.
Right? But then
that's where you just have to eat the peanut butter of the gospel, man.
That's right. And but you also have to be careful because you can become allergic to the law in some circles. So, yeah. All right. Give me a number 1.
And number 1.
Jesus is allergic to death.
There we go.
There you go.
I mean, honorable mention. Eglon had an iron, or had a bronze, allergy.
Bronze deficiency. Gotta have that bronze, man.
Because it seems like they were still using bronze, because in Judges they bring up iron chariots all the time as being superior technology and weaponry, so more than likely Ehud had a bronze sword.
All right, I'm out of stuff. We need to move on. Can you tell it's Lent, listener? So, we have some emails we did not get to because we didn't have a producer with us last time. We have them today to make sure we go through our emails. First email from a listener. What does our listener have to say?
Yeah, yeah, it's from Carla. She says, "Hey, guys. I just wanted to let you know I've been enjoying the top 12s lately, especially the He Gets Us review. It seems like the ones where pastors get angry and frustrated are the best."
Well, you're going to love this episode.
A side note to Bullhagen, the devotions on KLMJ are so much better when you do them. Great job.
Well, thank you, listener. And we have another one from our super fan.
Super fan, The Baron, says, "Homies." That's, I don't know, kind of chummy, you know? We gotta keep the respect on the name. Homies?
Yo, word to my boys.
Anyways, first of all, awesome work getting this far. I'm very proud of you. The hip-hop was great this week. This is a couple weeks old now. AI Berg kept a remarkably good timing. I gotta be frank though, guys, I'm not gonna spend more time testing your math on foot than you have spent doing show prep over these years. I draw the line there. He says, I double-checked the estimations, and they seem about right, though. The big red flag in this week's episode also. Not sure how to tell you this, but you have done a top 12, top 12s before. I am afraid the podcast is getting so old that it's getting memory loss. I don't remember that. I believe it, but I don't remember it.
Yeah, we're going to need reference. You just can't throw it out there. We're going to need an episode number and a minute and second so that if you could find that for us so we can... archive that'd be great.
Yeah well, that way we know. I mean, we won't say anything about it, but that way we know that we did it. Of course. He says, I hope this does not speak to the longevity, so be aware of that. Take care of yourselves, and if you can't find your car keys sometimes, just figure maybe an angel is looking out for you. He says, I'll have this year's data for Ember Days in at the end of the month, so I will begin my recording on the report as soon as I figure out what a true crime podcast is. I hope it's a dramatization. Well, I guess he's got some learning to do.
There is a lot of drama involved.
That's true. He's got some interview suggestions. Joe Rogan, turn the tables. Some random kids. Kids say hilarious things. That's true. If we could get some children on the podcast, that could be funny. Dr. Koontz, he laughs at everything. Is that true?
He does, actually.
He says Orange Man. I don't know who Orange Man is.
Probably President Trump or...
Oh, it could be former President Donald Trump. Some AI language model, preferably by feeding it through voice to text and then having it respond via text to voice. Okay, yeah, we could do that. Like an interview with ChatGPT. That could be possible. We could maybe do that. Although I don't know how good it would be.
What we could do is, this is what we can do, Pete. We can do the interview of ChatGPT and like get into its core beliefs, like sneak in there.
Bro, it's three letters.
Whatever.
GPT.
I'm allergic it's to three saying letters. That correctly. I can't do it. I'm also allergic to seeing things. It's an age thing.
All right. He also has some cap or no caps for us. Let's see. District presidents getting bishop hats. Cap or no cap?
Technically, that would be a cap, wouldn't it?
Yes. By definition, that is a cap.
Yeah. That's a pretty easy one. Do you have any opinion on that, Berg?
How deep do you want to go down this rabbit hole?
Oh, I'll go as deep as you'll take us, Berg.
I mean... he's not just asking about the hats, right? He's asking if our district presidents should have bishop hats because they should be considered bishops, right? I mean, that's...
Well, what makes bishops separate from a normal clergyman? I don't know this.
Well, really nothing, because if you look at the qualifications for an overseer... which would be translated as episcopos or bishop, they're pretty much the same as the presbyters found in Ephesians, because Paul says to them that the Holy Spirit has made them overseers of the flock of God. And so in the New Testament, bishop, pastor, elder, these are all pretty much interchangeable terms. The Roman Catholics...
I was just going to ask that.
Yeah, so later on, in the first few centuries, you get kind of this threefold hierarchy of bishop, presbyters, and then deacons. It was kind of what develops.
Kind of in order?
Yeah, so bishops are at the top, presbyters are underneath. They would be the priests or the pastors. And then you have deacons under that. You know, there's a lot of stuff in our confessions about the power of bishops, and really, we've always taught the equality of ministers, that by divine right, there is no distinction between Bullhagen or I in what we do, in preaching, teaching, administering the sacraments. This is true also if you have multiple clergy at a particular congregation. Any sort of distinction in that regard would be by human right. And so bishops would have supervision over other pastors by human right. And that is what our district presidents in Germany after the Reformation, they were called superintendents. And in the Scandinavian countries, bishops were kept because they converted to Lutheranism. Well, I guess the question is are our district presidents actually doing the things that bishops do? Well, according to the Constitution, yes, they are supposed to oversee other pastors, test doctrine, do all that, you know, be involved in the call process. All that stuff is great. My biggest...
But that without teeth, though.
Well, and that isn't that the problem, right?
Yes, that's exactly the problem.
They are a position of responsibility with no authority, kind of like circuit visitor.
Right.
And that's the problem. If you don't have any bite, you know, because like the LCMS Constitution says that the district president should visit every parish or have one of his proxies visit every parish in his district once every 3 years. Okay. Why? So he can listen to sermons, so he can listen to Bible class, so he can get to know the pastors and the parishioners under their care. My problem with giving bishop hats to district presidents is because they are elected every, what is it, 3 years?
3 years, yeah.
Yeah. That seems problematic to me because there's always the risk that people are tempted that, okay, I got this position. I don't want to jeopardize it. Therefore, I'm going to do my job.
I don't want to give up my cool hat.
You know, because, I mean, to me, the trappings aren't as important. Having a neat hat, I can go buy a neat hat on the internet. The thing that matters to me is that these guys are actually doing their job, right?
Right.
I mean, with being a pastor... Yeah, we can have the nice little parking spot or, you know, whatever. But what really matters is, what are we doing? Are we preaching faithful sermons? Are we visiting the sick and the shut-in? Are we catechizing the young? Are we doing the things that God has actually set us here to do? In that regard, I can wear the uniform all I want, but if I'm not doing the things that God has sent me to do, it's actually a disgrace to that uniform. It's actually a disgrace... And I'm not being a pastor. And that means I can be defrocked by God through the congregation for negligence of duty if I don't actually do what a pastor's supposed to do. Same way with district presidents. Their office has been created up by human right. They are supposed to be kind of the watchdogs of doctrinal purity in a particular geographical region. For all but two of our districts.
And also be a voice with the other, like, point of connection with the other districts as well.
Right. And so if they're not doing that job, then they are negligent in their duties. Because, let's be honest, there's not a lot of good preaching going on in the Missouri Synod. There's a lot of problems. And this is why we need district presidents doing their jobs. Just like we expect our neighboring pastors to be doing their jobs.
And the election thing is kind of muddies it in the sense that, you know, what, there's a protection in the call in the sense that if a pastor is doing his work according to solid Lutheran and biblical doctrine, the congregation is not allowed to just say, well, we're going to remove you for any reason. And imagine what would happen. How would a pastor treat his congregation? Would he do things a little differently if in the back of the mind he knew, like, in 3 years, this congregation can vote me out? And how does that hamstring a district president? Maybe it doesn't at all. Maybe it's like, okay, someone else do it.
Right.
You know.
But as August Pieper's great essay on human domination in the church... people desire power. You know, we're sinners. We desire power. We desire primacy. Even the apostles aren't immune from this. Even late into Jesus' ministry, James and John are already jockeying for position against Peter.
Mm-hmm.
They even, like, co-opt their, you know, mom into it. Dear old Grandma Schmidt Zebedee to, you know, get on Jesus' good side.
Yeah, and that, isn't that by nature, I think, from experience, I think that is born out of conflict. That the reason why people desire power is so they can win an argument ultimately.
I think it actually boils down to two different emotions, fear and greed.
Yeah.
You know, we fear losing what we have and we're greedy for more. And these are the two emotions that run the world apart from Christ. And these two emotions paralyze, they sap us of our strength. They keep us striving and getting things that are of no solid worth. And that's the thing. Actually, the Christian life, which is given to us by Christ, is so much better. Yeah, it's a life of self-sacrifice, but then you're getting 100-fold back because you're giving what you have, but then 99 other people are giving what they have. Right?
Yeah. Can I address it, the cap, no cap, from a practical point of view?
Sure, why not?
So let's say a pastor is introducing things in a congregation very often because something is needed, right? But it takes time. And the congregation is struggling with it. And this happens all the time, right? All the time. Maybe a different vision of where a church needs direction needs to go. And to settle this, we're going to bring in the guy with the bishop hat. How does that enter into the discussion?
Well, whatever he says supersedes your own pastor.
Well,
if
that
he has a different
and
opinion, then they're going to be against their pastor.
Well, no, what they're going to say is, are we going to listen to the guy with a hat? That's what's going to happen. Oh, he's going to walk in the door. We know who's the side he's going to take. I mean, look at that hat. I don't know. That's not something I've given a lot of thought.
Well, so cap or no cap?
I think.
I don't know. I don't know.
I don't feel strongly on Berg because I've never really given this some thought. But I will be generally on the no cap.
Yeah.
And Berg's strong.
I mean, I really don't care. That's the thing. It's
that's it. Yeah.
Like apparel and accessories. I mean, oh guys, we have some new accessories in the church. It's so great.
Right. Because I can see how. Like, if you want to be able to, you know, it's kind of like you wear your clerical shirt so that, like, if you go to the nursing home, you know, you can be identified, right? You know, if you've got a you know, which one's a district president, you know?
It's the one with the purple shirt.
Right, right.
Although sometimes you can do that, like, you can just look and be like, that's the one with the big cross.
Right. No, this is what it used to be. You want to hear some old school, right?
Okay.
Who is the district president? Oh yeah, he's the one with the seersucker suit or the leisure suit. He's that guy. So, what's the next cap or no cap?
Cap or no cap? The sin of, I don't even know what that word is.
Onanism.
Onanism. The sin of onanism is only about money. Cap or no cap?
Cap.
Before we get going, Vicar, what is onanism?
So Judah's son he was given, I think, I don't remember her name, or it was Tamar.
Tamar, yep.
Was wicked, so God struck him dead.
Oh, yeah.
And so then Judah gave Tamar to Onan, and Onan used her for self-pleasuring, and so God struck him dead as well.
Yeah, so he let his semen
onanism
fall out on the ground.
Oh, yeah.
So,
yeah.
Rather than impregnating her.
So cap or no cap?
It's cap.
It's only about money.
It's onanism isn't just about money. It's also about responsibility and love for the neighbor. In the particular context of Onan, this is also confession of the resurrection of the dead. He was supposed to raise up his brother's son. His son, who would have been naturally begotten by him, would have been his brother's son in order to continue the line. And this was a way in which it's kind of a type or a picture of the resurrection of the body, because the name will never disappear from Israel. Even in our Lord Jesus's line, this is why there are two different genealogy. There's a legal genealogy in Matthew, and there is a natural genealogy in Luke. And so, so it's not just about money. It's also, he is really, this is what the Romans called the damnatio morari, right? The damnation of memory. This would be like saying, well, I'm going to pretend like my brother didn't even exist. Nobody's going to remember his name.
Got it.
So, I mean, I think onanism does have more to do than with money. I think it has to do with responsibility. I think it has to do with self-sacrifice, because once you have children, whether they're, you know, both naturally and legally yours, or in the case of the Old Testament, they're naturally yours, but legally somebody else's, you have to care for them. You have to raise them. You have to provide for them both spiritually and physically and materially. I mean, children are the only thing that we can take with us into heaven.
Right.
They are immortal creatures. They have souls. And so, yeah, this is way more than, I mean, money is just like skimming the gross fat off of this terrible, terrible stew.
Now I will say that this does, I think if you're Kanye West, okay, this is a stretch, his song Gold Digger would say it is about the money.
But you're not saying Tamar was a gold digger, right?
Well, I mean, this is actually a good thing, right? People don't have children because of money, but there are people who have children for money.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, so neither having no children can be just as much of a sin as having a ton of children. What matters? The heart, faith in the heart. Why are you having children? Not for biological immortality, not because you can live vicariously through them, because you sucked at sports or whatever. It's because they are a heritage from the Lord. And whether it's one child or many children or no children, if God doesn't give you any, what matters is faith in the heart or unbelief in the heart.
Yeah.
So,
and I want to apologize to Peter that I did not marry his mother for her athletic ability. Sorry, Pete.
I forgive you. Don't let it happen again.
Yeah, that's a great discussion in the sense that this is a continuing debate, right?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I mean, God gives children. We shouldn't be afraid of it. At the same time, like, if your wife is struggling, well, you know, maybe devote yourself to some fasting and prayer.
Mm-hmm.
Give her a break. Let the reader understand. He who has ears, let him hear.
Right.
Moving on, the last one he has is, the Paw Patrol crew would wipe the floor with Spidey and his amazing friends in a dead serious fight. Cap or no cap?
Boy, this is out of my league.
Yeah.
That is ridiculous.
I don't know how he knows this, but my son watches both of those shows, and what he's actually done is he has begun to combine both of those teams into an unstoppable team. So I'm Ryder Dad, and his mother is Sky Mom, and he's Stevie Chase Spider-Man, and he wears his Spider-Man pajamas, one pair of Spider-Man pajamas, and then he wears the shorts of another Spider-Man pajama over it. So he's got like the underwear over his, you know, his other pajamas.
Classic.
And then he'll go, web, web, web. He'll actually say web while he's shooting webs.
Wow.
So
I don't know, man. The Paw Patrol can like, they've got all these machines and stuff, but man, they're just dogs.
It's true.
Don't get me started on dogs.
They need to be guided by a human. So if Spidey and his amazing friends just take out Ryder, it's over.
Plus, you can never catch Spider-Man off guard, right? He's got the Spidey sense.
It's true.
I have no idea what we're talking about right now.
Okay,
I literally don't know what Paw Patrol is.
It's a children's TV show.
This is Paw Patrol.
Okay.
And they're just kind of, they're like Power Rangers, but they're dogs, and that's pretty much it.
Yeah, I mean, there's one that's a fire, you know, Marshall is the fire truck dog. And
they're basically
you
first
know,
responders.
Yeah. And they go around and they help people, and it's wholesome TV. I mean, although I never thought I would hear the term chalet on Paw Patrol, but I have. So a chalet is like a Swiss Alpine like cabin, and sometimes they're called chalets in the United States, especially at like ski lodges and stuff. So,
and here's Spider-Man and his amazing friends.
Oh.
Because there's the red Spider-Man, who's Peter, and then there's the black Spider-Man, and then there's a girl, right? Girl Spider something or other?
Spider-Gwen. Yeah,
Spider-Gwen. Spider.
There's, look at this one. There's Iron Man in here, too. Like, you're not beating Iron Man as Paw Patrol. Like, just Iron Man alone, man. Have you seen the first movie?
Iron Man is pretty rad, man.
Hey, how okay. See, your guys are stepping on a landmine. You guys realize this, right? If Paw Patrol is first responders, they win every argument, right?
What do you mean?
You cannot say first responders lose at anything anymore, right?
Well, it depends on what crowd you're running around with, but...
Yeah, I mean, one thing I lamented in one of our early episodes is, how come we never give any credit to second responders?
Or third responders.
Right.
Didn't we have a shout-out episode once to...
Yeah, I think we dedicated an episode to second responders.
Yeah, the cleanup crew, you know. Someone's got to do that, too.
So Paw Patrol would wipe the floor with Spidey and his amazing friends, cap or no cap. I say cap.
Yeah, it's because the Spidey friends also have a lot of awesome technology that Paw Patrol just doesn't have access to. The budget's too tight.
But here's... Okay.
They're working on public funds.
But are you going strictly... See, this is the thing, okay? If you're strictly going by strength, power, technology, it's going to be...
Spidey and his friends.
Spidey and his friends, right. If you're going to winning the hearts and the minds of the people, I think that goes to the Paw Patrol.
But this is a fight to the death.
But even if they lose the fight, are they going to lose the fight in the hearts of the American citizen?
Yeah, I mean, now they're martyrs. Spidey and his friends are
history
done.
History is written by the winners,
right?
Man.
You just have to view them all as Old Yeller, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Spidey and his friends had to put him down.
That's why they fought at the pound.
Right.
Amen.
I mean, if we're going theological, right? The Roman Empire, Pilate, which one was he? Think about that.
The firefighter dog.
So, I'm not convinced.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mr. Baron, superfan. We have one more email here to get through from Hannah. Hannah says, thank you for finally covering this topic in your episode. So she's referring to the original cap or no cap. She says, I appreciated that you explained the why of this custom. You did not, however, provide any insight as to why now. So I took matters into my own hands and I asked all three women how they decided to start wearing a head covering during the divine service. A non-head covering wearer also volunteered her opinion. I submit you my findings.
Wait.
So she did science.
Wow. How I wonder if it was difficult to find a woman's opinion on
that. Bro, not during women's month. You can't do that.
Okay, sorry. My bad.
You can't do that. This is women's month.
You had to ask? For sure they'd let you know.
Thus are her findings. 3 out of 3 head coverers cited 1 Corinthians 11.
Yep.
You guys know that one?
Yeah, yeah, we covered that with the head coverings. Yep.
Okay. 2 out of 3 mentioned the order of creation.
Mm-hmm.
As to why now, one woman said it's important to her in her culture today to make confessions of the distinctness of male versus female and the headship of her husband. The other two women had been studying 1 Corinthians 11 more closely and become convinced head covering was just a good practice.
Yeah.
The non-head coverer said that she would never wear a head covering as a confession against those who have made it a law.
Hmm.
Am I understanding that correctly?
So, yeah, she doesn't want to give the impression that everyone has to wear a hat.
Okay.
Not everybody has to. No cap. Right. No cap.
Right. That's right.
And of the three, one woman considered wearing a head covering all day because she prays throughout the day, but decided against it because she works in a multicultural environment and doesn't want anyone assuming she's confessing the Islamic faith.
Yeah, especially in Minnesota. I mean, that's a big deal in the Twin Cities. So,
All in all, some good conversations. Thanks for not picking up my slack, so I was forced to talk to my sisters in Christ. Your podcast, Mom Hannah.
Oh, so the question is, did Hannah ever give her opinion? Is Hannah a cap or no cap?
Well, she asked the other three. I think she was con- she was curious, but I don't think she's given her opinion. So maybe she needs to try it.
Hmm. Maybe it depends upon the hairstyle.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point.
What if, okay, I'm bringing people together, okay? All right, this is what you do. I'm going to bring people together. You with me? So what you're going to do is you're going to make popular a haircut that looks like a hat.
Oh, we're bringing back the bowl cut?
So if you do that, or maybe who was the character that just, you couldn't see who it was because the hair was just covering their face?
Cousin It.
Yeah.
Coconut head.
Oh, man.
Classic bowl cut.
Yes. And with that haircut, it'll answer the argument about having kids.
Not going to be concerned, buddy.
All right. Everyone, listener, please take all of my sayings today. Remember, I'm a crotchety old man who had to take a bunch of Benadryl today. Take that with love and forgiveness.
Never going to let you live please. Down that you're allergic to children playing outside. That's never going to leave.
Having fun. Look at them. They're having fun. Noisy, screaming, enjoying the sun. All right.
Wrap it up.
All right. Well, that ends the show. Thank you for listening. I'm Bullhagen.
I'm Berg.
And this is Vicar.
And may you get off my lawn.
Thank you for joining us. This podcast is available on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever else you get your podcasts. Questions, thoughts, concerns? You can contact us on Facebook at facebook.com/clericalerrorspodcast, on Twitter at clericalerrorsp for podcast, or email us at feedback@clericalerrors.org. Thanks for listening to Clerical Errors. See you next time.